Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to Just Rugby NZ, where we'll talk about anything, as long as it's rugby. I'm Grant Harding, and with me to talk is Rugby News magazine editor Campbell Burns. Campbell, the NPC now down to the final four after four very different but equally absorbing semi-finals. Let's start with Wellington against Counties Monaco on Friday night. It was only a fortnight previous that Counties Monaco had beaten the Lions 51-12, but the impact of four All Blacks and the return of charismatic leader Du Plessis Corifi was enough to galvanise the tournament's number one seed.
Yes, it certainly was. Very different from the 51-12 shellacking that the Lions had a fortnight before, as you say. So Wellington, bolstered by those players you mentioned, never really allowed Counties Manukau to get into their stride. And that was a very good defensive shutout overall. Cam Roygaard was a bit of a threat for the Steelers, but overall, Wellington did the business without probably ever sort of firing into absolute top gear. But they did have certainly some good performers in there, and I liked what Asafo Almoa did around the track, very dynamic. But I think Riley Higgins continued his good form, scored a great try, second five, and he's probably been one of the best performers in midfield in NPC.
Yeah, well, he's earned selection for the New Zealand 15 on the back of his form in the NPC, which was, just reward. Billy Proctor, I thought, was outstanding also. But Amua involved in three of the tries, storming runs down the sideline, one from a brilliant line-out move, actually, when Du Plessis Corifi threw a dummy infield, and then they went back on the blind, three forwards handling before Corifi scored. But Amua, why can't we get him into that kind of position in the All Blacks?
Well, certainly he's fine with ball in hand. He's very dynamic. We know that. He's he's a bit of a like-for-like with Samasoni Taukeiahu, who's been injured all season. But really, it's just his layout throwing, particularly under pressure, which I guess is the main spotlight at international level goes on him there. But certainly around the track, he's as dynamic as ever. So that was a good hit out for him. And I'd like to see him play that Japan test at least to, we know he's not the number one hooker. Cody Taylor is, but if he can certainly put his name forward and he can maybe try and cement that that bench spot for the All Blacks.
You've mentioned Roygaard, second game back, first start since returning. Another good performance, a well-taken try from a tap kick, and I think he handled in the other try they scored as well. But he was up against TJ Perenara there. Last outing in Wellington, that was great that he was able to play and scored a wonderful try.
Yeah, it was. I think TJ's only played about 30 games for Wellington in 14 seasons, so it just shows you he's either been away on sabbatical or he's been on All Blacks duty. So, but we know he's a passionate Wellington man and a Northern United club man, so he always likes to get back and perform. And I think it was nice ovation from the crowd there for him. And so he's now only got possibly three or four more games left in his career in New Zealand, but certainly on New Zealand soil, that was his last game. I can't see him coming back at the age of 35, 36 to play again, but who knows?
Well, he didn't offer that at the end of the game. He said that was pretty much it. And he scored a heck of a lot of tries over the years on that stadium and for the Hurricanes in Wellington. So, he's certainly done his duty, if you like. Counties Manukau, they came good in the second half of the season, but their execution wasn't good enough to consistently build pressure against Wellington. As you say, brought a lot of physicality on defence. And that yellow card in the first half, that was also crucial, with Wellington scoring twice in that 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. That yellow card to Zuru Tongiatama, and then we saw Hoskins Sotutu throw the ball onto the line out. So is there anything that man cannot do on a rugby field? But no, the Steelers had a very good second half of the season. I think they got woken up by that 48-3 loss to Tasman at home. They played some really good run and gun type rugby. Their loose forwards were outstanding, good depth there. But, you know, when you consider they didn't have a Tini Nanai Saturo or Jimmy Tupou for most of the second half of the season, that was a really good effort. I did wonder about having Alatimu at 10 and Hohepa at 12. I thought it was better the other way around, but it seemed to work quite well for the most part, not necessarily last weekend. But, you know, overall a pretty good season by Counties Manukau, given the resources they have to get into the playoffs, and their challenge will be getting everyone fit and on the field and pushing on next year.
Yeah, exactly. And I think James Thompson said last week that it was the first time in about 8 years that they'd qualified for the last eight. So it has been a good season. If Wellington had been a convincing winner in semi-final one, the second semi-final in Tauranga was destined to go to the wire. Bay of Plenty and Hawke's Bay hadn't met in the round robin. And in the end, it was the home team with a last-minute try to substitute hooker Tane Kolosi, who advanced. Campbell, very tight game.
Very tight game. I wonder the late scratching of Pasilio Tosi, how much impact that had on the Steamers, because they were very much favoured. But Hawke's Bay threw a fair bit at it, given they haven't shown a lot of form in the last month. So, you know, the likes of Tyrone Thompson and Harry Godfrey back at fullback had big games, and they put some real heat on Bay of Plenty, and the Steamers had to really mark up at the end, and they were assisted by that penalty try and then obviously the last try at the death. So a very tight affair, certainly tighter than many pundits had predicted.
Yeah, I think Hawke's Bay will wonder how they lost that game, having led 12-7 against a very strong wind at half-time. But it was actually a very strange wind. It was very strong and swept to the right-hand touchline of the team using it. It sort of made it hard to kick the ball to ground for right-foot kickers, I felt. Did you feel that?
Yeah, it's often tough with those winds because it sounds like, oh, it's going to easy enough to play with it. And then into it, you've just got to hold the ball and keep it tight. But it's not always that easy because passing then becomes difficult and the kicking's got to be very precise. And that ground looked in pretty good nick, so there was a few balls that rolled a long way, certainly for October. So it's not always easy to perform when you have the wind in your favour, but if it's a swirling one, then the kicking's got to be really on point.
Yeah, well, Hawke's Bay will look back on a season where they lost the Shield by not turning over the last ruck of the match and lost their chance to advance to the semi-finals by giving away a late penalty and going to a line out near their line, which was crucial in the end. But I actually thought that Leroy Carter's first try, I must make a disclosure here, I'm a Hawke's Bay fan, but the first try by Leroy Carter, that was most definitely forward out of Cole Forbes' hands and should have been looked at by the TMO. The referee got absolutely correct in the Renton no try when he had his knee down, I'll give him that. But that one, that sort of rankled a little bit. But Hawke's Bay will look back at crucial handling mistakes, penalties, which stopped them from building pressure. Still reasonable season to make the quarterfinals. On Saturday night, the new Ramfurly Shield holder and 2023 MPC champion, Taranaki, they fronted at home 6 days after claiming the log of wood in Nelson, and despite a valiant second half comeback from 12-0 down, a quite incredible drop goal out of nowhere sealed the deal for the seventh-seeded Waikato, who got revenge for a controversial 25-19 defeat in the round robin. What did you make of it, Campbell?
Well, that was an extraordinary game in some ways, but it didn't fully surprise me, partly because Taranaki had just won the Shield, and the mental effort, as much as physical, of winning that would have taken a fair bit out of them. And then Tapia Cook-Savage, who landed a drop goal last season, I think against Auckland for Waikato. So this is a very rare occurrence in the NPC drop goal to win a match. But that was a great option. I mean, he's a Mr. Fix-It who's come in for, I think, the injured Josh Morby. And we know he can play three or four positions. He's done the job again. And to win that, it was a well-taken, well-thought-out option. And I think that put Waikato ahead 15-0 at the time, and then they hung on from there. So really big effort from Waikato to do that as the underdogs. But I have to say, Luke Jacobson did make a very big difference wearing the number 7 jersey, put in a big shift, strong defensively, and he sort of set the tone defensively for the Mulus to win that match.
Yeah, Luke Jacobson certainly is a very powerful player, and Samapini Finau is a powerful player too, but he got a yellow card, which was put Waikato under a little bit of pressure. Great Aaron Cruden in the second half of the season for Waikato is starting to be quite influential.
Yeah, he is. Look, they've used D'Angelo Leawela. I think Taha Kemata was injured earlier on, but Cruden at 35, he's running the cutter. He's not going to make any searing breaks necessarily, but he just steers them around the field, does the right thing at the right time. He kicked a goal that was obviously important in the end. So, Aaron Cruden, he never won the NPC with Manawatu. I think he may have won a championship second-tier title, but he'll have his eye on closing out his New Zealand career, at least with an NPC top-level title.
Yeah, he was a hell of a player as an All Black, that's for sure. Up against Dan Carter, of course, but he certainly played plenty of tests. Just going back to Tupaia Cook-Savage, he was an Olympian in the Sevens program. I've actually had my eye on him for a few weeks now because he's been consistently good for Waikato. It's great to see these guys who have come out of the Sevens program and making an impact on the NPC.
Yeah, that's right. So guys like Moses Leo have played really well for North Harbour. Leroy Carter, as you mentioned, for the Steamers. Cook-Savage, I'm not sure where he is with his Sevens contract, whether he's back in the fold with them when this campaign's over, or whether he's putting his hand up for Super Rugby. But I know his versatility is a great asset, and he's got a wide skill set. So this is a guy who filled in at number 10 for Waikato last year as well, as we can remember.
Yeah.
Can play in midfield and in the back three. So he's gold in a squad situation, and then coming out with a big play like that to win it with a pot was great to see.
Yeah, no, very good footballer. Hard lines for Taranaki. They only lost to Wellington and Bay of Plenty in the round robin. They have the shield to show for the season, and a number of players elevated to national honours in that New Zealand 15. It was a shame that Captain Caelan Boshier was ruled out, because he is a really good player, and also the talented Jacob Ratamaitavuki Neepkins, who we wish all the best as he begins his recovery from a serious neck injury. Well, I said a few weeks ago that Tasman's build-up to the playoffs was hardly ideal, a storm week featuring two Ramfurly Shield matches, and it got worse when they lost the Shield. Also in that final week, they lost their powerhouse runner and turnover king, Tava Tava Nawai, to injury. So their Crusader neighbours, Canterbury, bolstered by three All Blacks in the tight five, came to Blenheim sniffing blood, and the scent would have only increased when Ethan Blackadder pulled out with a calf injury. I'm not sure how that's going to affect his All Black prospects. But in the end, it was a record demolition job, 33-7 at half-time, 62-14 at full-time. Complete dominance, Campbell.
Yeah, it was bizarre in some ways. Only 2 weeks ago, Canterbury were on the receiving end of their worst loss in history to North Harbour in Albany, and their coach, Marty Burke, basically questioned their manhood. He said they gave up, which is a big call to make, but it obviously had the desired effect, because they then beat Waikato and then just came out steaming against the Marco, who were certainly undermanned, no doubt. But Canterbury, their three All Blacks came back and all had big impacts in the forward pack, particularly Sam Darry at lock. But they just controlled the ball. And they also had Mitch Drummond and Willie Hines back at halfback, and they've been missing for most of the season. So they suddenly had a lot of experience come back into their side, and it certainly showed, because that was their best performance by some distance of the season. And it allowed Dallas McLeod and Braden Enor in the midfield to cut some cut shapes and holes in that Marco defence. And although Levi Amor was back for the Marco, they certainly missed Tava Tava Nawe, and of course missing several forwards who were injured. So the Marco, a very tough end to their season, and that storm week really has really hit them hard. And then now they have to look at a scoreboard that says 62-14, which is almost unbelievable for the third seeded team to go down by that margin.
Yeah, and especially, and they beat Canterbury earlier in the season as well, 22-7. They'll be disappointed to have gone out that way. But they've had a good year, and including that historic and difficult run with the Shield. And last week we discussed whether or not there really needed to be a storm week. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, certainly if you talk to most of the coaches, they would rather not have the storm week. They would rather lose a quarter final and just have the straight 10 weeks plus into the semis. I'd like to see them go back to what they did maybe 13 or 14 years ago and have a full round robin and then semis. That would be fair. I mean, do they really have to have quarterfinals? Probably not if it's a fairly tight window. So that would alleviate that. But some of these sides are really struggling anyway with injuries. And if you have it towards the end of the season, it's really you're really calling on all your resources and probably bringing in guys on a week contract, a week long contract. So I don't think, and certainly from a player welfare perspective, the coaches I speak to, and you know, guys like Ross Filippo of Waikato and Neil Barnes of Taranaki are very vocal on this. I mean, they just say there's actually no need for it. And very tough from a coaching and player perspective.
Well, I agree with most of what you say there, especially the player welfare. I think it's crazy that, you know, we see so many people dropping in this competition, and it's obviously the stress on the body. But I can't see any reason why we still can't have quarterfinals and have no Storm Week. The All Blacks don't play in this competition hardly at all. You know, the NPC is virtually standalone today, and I think the Storm Week needs to go. Final thought on that match, a goal line dropout has to go 5 metres, and All Black David Harvilli will never do that again. So the semi-finals are decided. Bay of Plenty host Canterbury late Saturday afternoon, and Wellington host Waikato on Saturday evening. A major component of these matches is who is fit and available. The All Blacks, I believe, are leaving for Japan on Thursday, and 6 New Zealand 15 players will also be going up there. But there was a suggestion it could be dependent on the NPC. That was from Clayton McMillan. But what we do know is that the lineups will be different again. Canterbury will be without 3 tight 5 forwards when they run out against Bay of Plenty for the first time this season. But Campbell said they would have gained a lot of confidence in the last 2 weekends with victories over Waikato and Tasman and those players coming back that you've mentioned. Conversely, Bay of Plenty, I think, were well below their best on Saturday, still have home advantage, and will be deeply motivated by the possibility of a first NPC title since the inaugural comp in 1976. How do you see it going?
Yeah, well, I think at home, I think the Steamers will be favourites there. I mean, they were more consistent throughout the season, and if you remove the All Blacks, and I'm hoping no All Blacks 15 players will be removed at least for this weekend, then it comes back to probably a more even proposition. But I just like the quality across the board that the Steamers have. Well balanced side, good midfield, strong set piece. Tigerish loose forward trio, Caleb Trask at 10. You know, some X factor out wide. So all around, I think the Steamers will get it together and perform better. And Canterbury, it's a question of whether in losing those 3 All Black forwards, they revert to the inconsistency we saw earlier in the season. And that's going to be the interesting thing, because I think it'll be pretty hard for Canterbury to replicate that sort of 80-minute performance again. We've very rarely seen sides put out 80-minute displays in the NPC, and that was just one out of the bag. So Canterbury, there's going to be a bit going on. Rumika Poihepi at 10, running the cutter. They've experimented a bit this year in that position, but I think he offers the right skill set and probably tactical nous for them there. Having Drummond and Hines back in at halfback will be important, and they've got midfielders in form. The other question, of course, is whether they put Joe Moody back at tight head prop, given Fletcher Newell stepped in.
Not a good idea.
Breach. Yeah, Moody has not performed well in 5 or 6 games at tight head, and you can't really blame him because he hasn't played there. So I don't know why they wouldn't step up someone like Seb Calder. So, you know, how they put out their 15, the Cantabs on Saturday will be instructive, but I think they'll be slight underdogs anyway in Tauranga.
Yeah, it's going to be a great game there. Then the Wellington clash, Wellington, they're going to be without the flash and dash of Omua, Proctor, Perenara and Love when they take on Waikato, who will start without Luke Jacobson and Samapeni Finau. Interestingly, those teams haven't met in the round robin either. Wellington finished as top seed with their only losses to Tasman in the Ranfurly Shield Challenge in Counties Manukau. They'll be wary of Waikato, who haven't exactly hummed this year, but on their day can be extremely difficult.
Yeah, well, that's right, and they've shown some defensive starch last week, in particular the Mulus. So I certainly wouldn't be discounting them. Certainly, losing someone like Billy Proctor may hurt a bit, but then they've got a man like Peter Umang Jensen they can slot in. He's been captain for much of the season, so I don't think they're going to lose a lot there. Reuben Love was coming off the bench, and as long as Lakai plays, he could be in combination good loose forward trio with him and Kariffi and Caleb Delaney, a ball winner at 6. So I think they'll be okay. I think they've used Lenny Uppisai mainly at hooker this year, so he'll he'll just come in for Al Moore. So they're probably pretty well equipped to cover the loss of their All Blacks, and they'll be favourites for sure. But whether they can they can do the business against a resurgent Waikato, which will be coming hot, knowing that they only finished seventh in the round robin, but they're only 80 minutes away from the final.
Yep, it's all about who will turn up on the day. It's going to be fascinating viewing next Saturday. You're listening to Just Rugby NZ with Grant Harding and Rugby News Magazine editor Campbell Burns. And Campbell, you've got a new magazine out.
We have, yes, our October issue. Sam Derry on the cover, which is timely after his big game on the weekend. But I would expect him to play a fair part on this looming Northern tour. So we look at that. I preview the Northern tour, and if the All Blacks can go 5 from 5, that would be an outstanding effort. Given they're facing England, France and Ireland in the middle of that tour. Various other pieces in there. We talked to Kelly Brazier, who I thought was on the verge of hanging up her boots, but has decided to play another season with the Sevens and maybe even put her hand up for the Rugby World Cup 15s next year. So plenty inside the latest rugby news, which is out now.
Well, that's very interesting because we're leading straight into the Black Ferns now. Finally got a W at WXV1, 39-14 against France. 4 tries to the wingers, including a hat-trick to Caitlin Vaha'akolo and another 3 to the forwards. Good way to end the season, but was it a giant step in the right direction or a small step?
Oh, I think probably a small step. Probably a large step for confidence more than anything. After that poor loss to Ireland and the 2 defeats to England. But 39-14, accurate reflection probably of where the two sides are at. France is not quite the same side as a couple of years ago. The team that really should have beaten us were it not for that late missed kick in the Rugby World Cup semi-final. So they didn't really threaten the Black Ferns. The Black Ferns were very much stronger with the ball in hand, although they didn't get the scrum into order until Tania Kalu-Nuvali, their best scrummager, came on. But to score 7 tries to 2 after the season they've had was pretty pleasing. It certainly didn't solve all their issues, particularly around kicking, both off the tee and out of hand as well, where Hannah King still doubts over that and their halfback combination. So, you know, there were some questions answered, but we know the Black Ferns are pretty potent out wide. Caitlin Vaha'akolo, of course, but also Ayishi Litiyenga, some other good performers, Kaipo Olsen-Baker, who I think has got to be the number 8 going forward, and also Georgia Ponsonby, who was the player of the match, did well at hooker, both with her core tasks and around the field. So some good performers there, but a lot of work to sort out, and I would like to think they'll have more than 4 tests before the Rugby World Cup kicks off next year.
Yeah. England beat Canada 21-12 to win the tournament unbeaten. Ireland finished second with a 26-14 win over USA, with Canada third. That dropped Canada to third. New Zealand were fourth, then France and USA. So a lot of thinking to do before next year's Rugby World Cup in England, as Campbell says, and that's in August, September. Last week, we couldn't include the New Zealand 15, 29-strong squad to play Munster and Georgia in our musings, as they were named a few hours later, but a strong team named, including 5 who have played for the All Blacks this year and 10 in total, 7 backs and 3 forwards. Anything catch your eye, Campbell?
No, it was a pretty good team overall, unless they've rewarded NPC form. So Hoskins, so Tutu's back in. Great to see Oliver Haig, the Otago loose forward. Good to see him in there, and the likes of Naitoa Arkoi, Kurt Eklund, some of these guys performing well at NPC level. Certainly Riley Higgins is an NPC selection. Dallas McLeod's come back into it. Still disappointing that Ricky Talley seems to have dropped off the radar for reasons unknown. I certainly would have rated him higher than Brodie McAllister, who hasn't played too badly for Canterbury, but Ricky Talley would be the major omission for me. I just think it should be a standalone squad that goes up for their 2 games. The All Blacks have got a squad of 36, so I don't know why there has to be any mixing and matching. Obviously, if there's season-ending injuries at the All Blacks, they can call one of the players from this group up. But it should be a standalone group for my eyes. But I think Clayton McMillan will do the job with this group, and if they have 2 good wins, that will cement some further depth.
Well, you can say 2 good wins, but Georgia will be no easy challenge. You know, they gave Australia a heck of a game earlier this year, 40-29 that game in Australia. And, you know, they're a tough forward pack, and they've got lots of gas on the outside.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I mean, it won't be straightforward, but still you'd like to think with the quality of player and given these guys are all capable of playing for the All Blacks. Some already have, but if, in the next year or two, you'd think we should still have the edge. So, you know, but look, it's Hoskins' Sotutu situation is interesting. He's been outstanding for Counties Manukau. So he's come back in, you know, just a ball winner, always gets go forward. And I think Clayton McMillan, who played number eight himself, will enjoy working with Sotutu. So that's good to see. Josh Jacom, one for the future. Didn't have a great game for Taranaki on the weekend, but has played pretty well all season for his province. So, you know, he's a guy who'll be looking for more game time with the Chiefs next year. So, and look, out the back, Sean Stevenson, brilliant attacking player. Imoni Narawa is listed as an outside back, but has been playing centre for Bay of Plenty all season. He's been in good form. Kenny Naholo as well on the wing. So there's actually some very, very good players in this group.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I don't get New Zealand rugby press releases, so I'm unsure if any players were listed as unavailable. But, you know, Nono Saturo would have been one I would have thought would have been in that team. But injuries, obviously. Brett Cameron, the Hurricanes and Manawatu First Five was definitely out. He's out of Super Rugby next year with a knee injury. To the Heartland Championship and the semi-finals of the Meads Cup and the Lahore Cup. And the Lahore Cup, King Country withstood a massive fight back from Ngāti Porou East Coast, 34-31. They led 24-7 at halftime, while it was an incredible scoreline in Levin, where West Coast beat Horowhenua Kapiti 52-51. I think they scored late in the piece to clinch that away victory, having earlier led 40-20.
Remarkable.
Oh yeah, they led 40-27 at halftime, the Coasties, and they've given themselves a chance of gaining back or going back to back in the Lahore Cup. Incredibly, Campbell, Horowhenua Kapiti beat West Coast 27-26 in Greymouth during the round robin, a point each way if you like. Anyway, King Country will host West Coast in the final, having beaten them 43-17 in the round robin. More sensational was the Meads Cup. Thames Valley smashed Whanganui 38-15 in Whanganui, having lost the Bill Osborne Tonga earlier in the season by a narrow margin to Whanganui. Then South Canterbury's record-breaking winning run came to an end at 39, with near neighbours Mid-Canterbury kicking a late penalty goal to win 17-16, having come back from 16-6 down at Fraser Park in Timaru. Earlier in the year, South Canterbury had beaten Mid-Canterbury 41-19. An amazing run comes to an end, Campbell.
Well, it does, 39 games in the competition, spread over 5 years. But there were signs that they were creaking this year, the green and blacks of South Canterbury. They'd been playing all over the show. They finally made it back to Fraser Park. But it was their neighbours up the road who just did the business on them. And I just got the feeling that they were vulnerable, even though they'd been winning. They'd been struggling to get the dominance of recent years. So without having seen the game, it sounded it came down right down to the last minute with a kick and, you know, fair play to Mid-Canterbury. So a great run comes to an end, but, you know, they've been outstanding performers in this Heartland Championship for 5 years, and now there'll be a new name engraved on the trophy. Can Thames Valley recapture those glory days of 2018 where they made that stirring run to win that Meads Cup, their first and only Meads Cup, I think it was, for the Swamp Foxes. They'll be at home and they'll be favourites against Mid-Canterbury. So, you know, all I have to say is come on, those mighty Swamp Foxes.
Well, you were a Swamp Fox, weren't you? Did you have a season for the Swamp Foxes?
Back in 97 in the old NPC Second Division, we're still on the record books for one of the heaviest defeats of all time to Northland, but we did actually have a win over South Canterbury at Rhodes Park and Thames. Back in the day, South Canterbury weren't quite as good in those days, but we did compete hard in Second Division for some time there, and I enjoyed my 1997 season, although I probably had to make too many tackles that season.
Well, who was the coach then? Was Norm Pratt the coach then, or was he after that?
No, he might have been after that. No, yeah. we had Paul Lowe and Taki Sheehan. Taki, of course, had played many games at halfback for Thames Valley. So they were, you know, we had a sort of a mix and match side. We had some great old campaigners like Roger Psycho Wilton and Chris Costello was in there. Richie Taylor, who played over 100 games for Thames Valley, as did Aaron McDonald, the halfback. So we had some decent players and quite a few lone players as well, including briefly, I think, Matt Lord, the father of All Black Josh.
Oh, amazing, amazing connections, yeah. Look, we're looking forward to a huge, huge weekend of rugby coming up. The NPC semi-finals, the finals of the Lahore Cup and the Meads Cup. It's going to be fantastic. That's all we've got time for this week. On behalf of Rugby News editor Campbell Burns, I'm Grant Harding.